Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Greetings, gamer, and welcome to Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I'll continue my discussion of the new Dungeon Master's Guide for Dungeons & Dragons. This is an awesome resource for any GM of almost any RPG game out there. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener. Welcome back to the show. Hello, fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 18 of Game Master's Journey. I'm Lex Starwalker, and I am transmitting this message from the Obsidian Monolith somewhere outside time and space. So back by popular demand is another Dungeon Master Guide episode. I wasn't sure if I was going to continue with these because I'd kind of covered the parts of the Dungeon Master's Guide that were most relevant to people playing the most games. From here on out, it's a little bit more tight on Dungeons & Dragons relevancy, although I still think that there's a lot of good stuff here that you can use in any game. But I got quite a few comments from people who loved these series of episodes and were really hoping that I would continue with the rest of the book, so that's what I'm going to do. I try to give my listeners what they want as much as I can. So far in episodes 9 and 11, I've covered part 1 and part 2 of the Dungeon Master's Guide, chapters 1 through 7. So part 1 is called Master of Worlds, and part 2 is called Master of Adventures. So today I'm starting on part 3 called Master of Rules. So we start out with chapter 8, which is called Running the Game, and this is advice on running the game. So the cool thing about this edition of D&D is you do not have to have the Dungeon Master's Guide to run this game, to be a DM. The basic systems are all in the player's handbook. That's all you need. So the Dungeon Master Guide has additional things, goes into more detail on things, and then has a lot of optional rules and variant rules, as well as tools to help you do various things like create NPCs and create towns and all kinds of stuff. So the first thing we have here is a section on defining kind of your style as a dungeon master. So this asks questions like, how do you feel about table talk? How do you feel about people, your players talking about things when their characters really couldn't talk about things like in combat? Are you going to be a real stickler about, you know, the round 6 seconds, so there's only so much you can communicate each round? Are you going to be a real stickler for, you know, metagaming and stuff like that or not? So these are kind of questions to think about for yourself as a dungeon master, so that, you know, you kind of know how you're going to play this. Another question is, how do you handle missing players? So how are you going to handle that if people don't show up? What do you do if you have a small group? So if you have, you know, a group of 3 people or less, this has some suggestions on how you can deal with that. Maybe by having players have more than one character, various suggestions. What do you do if you have an established group that you've been running with these guys for a while and you have a new player come in? You know, do you have a make a first level character? You know, how do you deal with that? What's your relationship with the dice as a GM? And it kind of gives 3 examples. So are you someone where you go with the dice and whatever comes up on the dice, that's what happens, and the dice are kind of king? Or do you tend to ignore the dice and decide things based on how reasonable you think they are, or how good you think a player's idea is, and you tend not even roll the dice that much? Or are you somewhere in between? So these are all things to think about as a GM, you know, before you even get your players together, before you even start running the game, so that you can kind of know where you stand, so you can communicate that to your players so that, you know, everybody's on the same page. So then we have things about ability checks, attack rolls, saving throws, setting the DC, what's the difficulty of something the PCs want to do, as well as a variant rule for having automatic success with checks. We also have some discussion on advantage and disadvantage, and more guidelines on handing out inspiration. We have a section on exploration, so this includes things like travel pace, you know, how much ground can you cover in a day, visibility outdoors in various situations, noticing creatures, tracking, stuff like that. We have a section on social interaction, and this includes our NPC attitudes way back from second edition, I know, probably before that, friendly, indifferent, hostile. And also advice on role-playing NPCs and how to kind of make them come alive at the table for your players. Some stuff on interacting with objects, and this has your things for, like, you know, if the PCs want to bash through a wall or a door or something like that, how to deal with that. Then we have a combat section. We've got a bit on initiative, some discussion of initiative, improvising damage, and we have a nice chart with damage severity by level. And again, we're doing our setback, dangerous, and deadly scales like we talked about a few episodes ago. So you can look at this table and say, okay, my party is level 5. I want this to be a dangerous amount of damage. How much damage should that be? Also, we have a nice little table for adjudicating area of effect targets. And this is something I really like. I've been running Tyranny of Dragons, and this has come up a few times where, you know, my wizard wants to use Burning Hands, and he wants to know how many people can he fit in that 15-foot cone. And the times that it came up, we were actually using the grid kind of loosely. And so we ended up, you know, somebody found some page from Pathfinder, I think, that kind of illustrated what a 15-foot cone looks like on a grid. And A, it was kind of a pain to look that up, and it killed a lot of time. And I don't know, it just seems overly complicated to me. And so this has an alternate system that I really like. And the other nice thing about this system is the little hints from Paizo, as far as, you know, these are the squares that would be covered by a 15-foot cone, are of no use to you if you're doing Theater of the Mind, which is what, you know, we're doing a lot more in 5e these days, or at least I am. So this is a very simple method. It's just a very simple little math equation. For instance, for a cone, you divide the size of the cone, in this case, say Burning Hands, it's 15 feet, by, what was it? Now I don't remember. See, this is why I have my DMG right here. While I'm looking that up, Benjamin in the chat room says that he feels like the optional rules in the DMG were mainly there to help pull in 3.5 players. And I think that's definitely true. And that's one thing I like about the optional rules in here is, you know, this is kind of an addition for all editions. And it's easy when you're looking through 5th edition to say, oh, this reminds me of 2nd edition. And oh, this reminds me of 3rd edition. And this reminds me of 4th. And so a lot of these optional rules are the other options. So, you know, if they went, well, we're going to do this thing kind of like we did in 2nd edition, well, then the optional rules may have the 3rd edition way and even the 4th edition way, which is really cool. Oh, here we go. So a cone, you take the size and you divide it by 10 and round up. So 15-foot cone divided by 10 is 1.5. You round that up, that's 2. So right away, you know, Burning Hands is going to affect 2 people. And then you can add or subtract to that based on, well, if there's, you know, if people are really spread out, then it might be less than 2. If people are really packed together, it might be more than 2. And one suggested way to determine that is just to roll a 3-sided and subtract or add whatever you roll on there. So I really like that. Depending how math friendly you are, that might seem like harder than dealing with the grid. I think it's super easy. And also because, you know, for instance, my wizard uses Burning Hands a lot, so he's just going to remember that it affects 2 people after we do this once or twice, right? And that's something you can remember, as opposed to trying to remember that grid pattern of a cone, which there's actually a couple different patterns that you can use, it's a lot easier just to remember two people. So, and that's even something if you're using like index cards for your spells, which is what I usually do when I play a spellcaster, you can write that right on your index card. So I really like that. We also have here a system for dealing with mobs of opponents. And this is really cool. So this is a way if you're facing your PCs with dozens and dozens of opponents to get rid of all those dice rolls. And it basically says, depending on how many opponents there are, how many of them it takes to get like an automatic hit. So you can actually completely remove the dice rolling on your end as DM if you want, which is awesome. There's also a whole section on miniatures. So if you want to use miniatures in the game, there's more stuff for that. There's a section on chases, on siege equipment, section on diseases with example diseases, on poisons with example poisons. And again, as is kind of the theme in 5th edition, in addition to just giving us poisons and diseases, we're given guidelines on creating our own, which is super cool. We have a section on madness. So if you want to run like more of a horror game and you want mechanics for madness and have that be more center stage in your campaign, it gives you guidance for that. And then we have a section on experience, and this includes things like what to do with absent characters. So if you have a player miss a session, how do you handle that? And it gives some suggestions for that. Non-combat challenges. So how do you award experience for something that doesn't have a CR or an XP rating beside it? As well as milestones experience, which is where you establish milestones for your story, and there are major or minor milestones, and those are worth a certain percentage of what they need to level. So instead of worrying about totaling XP for each encounter, you say, well, at this point in the story, they've achieved this major goal, so they get this much XP. And at this point in the story, they've achieved this minor goal, so they get that much XP. And then there's another XP variant, which is just level advancement without XP. So there's two types given here, either session-based or story-based. So session-based would just be if you said something like, you're going to level every 3 sessions or something like that. And story-based is kind of like the milestone, but it simplifies it even further, where you just say, at this point in the story, everybody levels to 2nd level. At this point, everybody's 3rd level. And that's actually kind of what I'm doing with my Tyranny of Dragons campaign. They call it, it's funny, you can tell this book was made during development instead of after, because they actually call it the milestone method, but it's really not, because the milestone method is different. This is really the story-based level advancement where, you know, you finish this chapter of the module, you gain a level. And it's really great. I like it. Lots less adding and subtracting at the end of the session, which is always nice. Chapter 9 is called Dungeon Master's Workshop, and this chapter is just full of lots of optional and variant rules. This is really great stuff. You can use this stuff to make your D&D exactly what you want. So kind of like what Benjamin was saying, you know, if you like the way a certain thing was done in maybe 3rd edition better than the way it's done in 5th edition, there's a good chance that that is going to be in there somewhere. The first variation we have here, which is kind of interesting, I think this would be kind of fun, it'd be fun to play test it, is proficiency dice. So as you may know, in 5th edition, you have a proficiency bonus that's based on your level, and it doesn't go up every level like it did basically in 3rd edition. Instead, every few levels it goes up. It starts at +2, I think it caps at +6, and you get that bonus with anything where you get a proficiency bonus. So what this does instead is, instead of having just that bonus, you get a die instead. So I think the +2, you get a d4. So any time that you're making a roll and you would get the proficiency bonus, instead of adding 2, you add a d4. And then the die scales as the proficiency bonus scales. So it goes like to a d6 and then a d8. So that's kind of interesting. So that way, instead of having this static bonus, you know, it's going to vary from roll to roll. And, you know, some rolls you might roll really well and others not so much. So I'm not sure. I like the static bonus because it's very simple and players can kind of anticipate how well they're going to do. Obviously, the D20 is still random, and you can't get around that. But at least you know kind of how you're going to do. We're adding in another random die. It gets a lot more unpredictable, but it could be a lot of fun. I don't know. It might probably slow things down a little bit, but it could be fun. So if you're using this variant, I'd like to hear from you. Shoot me an email at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com and let me know what you think of it and what your players think of it. I think it could be fun. Another skill variant that we're given is background proficiency, and this is pretty much similar, if not identical, to how skills are handled in 13th Age. And we just did a couple 13th Age interviews on the show. So basically this, you know, if you can argue that a certain thing would be relevant to your background, then you're proficient in that thing and you get the bonus, or you get the die, depending which variant you're using. And then another skill variant we have is personality trait proficiency, which is similar to the background proficiency, only instead of deriving bonuses from your background, you're deriving them from your positive personality traits, which actually come from your background. So it kind of seems like this is just a more specialized version of the background proficiency. So that's pretty cool. We have an alternate system for hero points. And my understanding is that hero points were used in previous versions of Eberron. So if you like that kind of thing, you can check that out. Basically, it works like the Bardic Inspiration, where you get another die to roll to add to your die roll for like a check or whatever. And then that, I think that scales. I don't remember. I'm not a huge fan of the hero points just because I really like inspiration, and I get a lot of mileage out of inspiration. And I don't think that hero points and inspiration go together super well. I think you're better off using one or the other. But if you're not a fan of inspiration, maybe check out hero points. It's similar. It's not as powerful as inspiration. So I guess if you think inspiration's overpowered, then maybe check out hero points. I'm really surprised, just a total aside, but I'm really surprised how few GMs, it seems like, actually use inspiration. In fact, my players, when I first started running, some of them were shocked that I actually used inspiration. I don't know. I think it's super cool. We also have two new possible ability scores here, honor and sanity. So you could use either of those or both of them in your game. And these are actual ability scores along with strength and dexterity and wisdom and all that stuff. So that's interesting. We have fear and horror systems. Again, if you're wanting to do some horror, we have systems for that, for making fear and horror kind of more present in your games and having some more mechanics around them. We have some healing variations. These are interesting. So one of these is that when you take a rest and you spend hit dice to regain hit points, that you have to use a healer's kit to do that. And you basically use one of the uses of a healer's kit to do that. That's really awesome if you're in the kind of a little bit more realism or a little bit grittier fantasy. You know, you're not just magically getting hit points back. You have to use some bandages or whatever from your healer's kit, which is pretty cool. We have a healing surges variation. So this is something straight out of 4th edition. So with this variation, you can, as an action, spend up to half your hit dice, just like in 4th edition. And you can do that once, and then you need to take a short or a long rest to be able to do it again. So if you liked healing surges in 4th edition, this is... you could bring them back if you wanted to. Another variation is slow natural healing, where at the end of a long rest, instead of automatically regaining all your hit points, you instead spend hit dice, just like a short rest. So there's another way to make things a little deadlier or make it a little bit more realistic how quickly people can heal and recover from things. Next, we have some rest variations. So we have two options here. If you want a more epic level of realism or non-realism, then you can change the short rest from an hour to 5 minutes, and you can change the long rest from 8 hours to 1 hour. If, on the other hand, you want a more gritty sense of realism in your game, you can change the short rest from an hour to 8 hours and a long rest from 8 hours to 7 days. Now, although that might be a little bit more realistic, I think you might have a hard time finding players to play in that game unless you're just going to have a lot of downtime. because after any major combat, they're going to have to rest for like a week. I think what would actually happen is it would put quite a premium on healing magic, and you're going to see a lot more potions and healing spells being used, and very little actual natural healing being used. Unless, of course, you're not going to have healing magic and you're going for super realism. We also have rules for firearms and explosives, as well as alien technology, things like lasers and antimatter weapons. Super cool stuff. We also have an alternate system called plot points that I think is really cool. So the way this works is each player has one plot point, and you can spend your plot point to have an effect on the story. Once every player has used her plot point, they each gain one plot point again. So we have three different ways you can do this. Option one, called What a Twist, the player spends a plot point to add some element to the setting or situation that the group, including the DM, must accept as true. So an example of this is, let's say you're in a dungeon and you're a player, and you say, I'm going to spend a plot point and declare that there is a secret door right here. So then now there's a secret door, even though I, as the DM, did not plan on there being a secret door there. Now there is, and I need to decide what's on the other side. Option two, called The Plot Thickens. Whenever a player spends a plot point, the player to her right must add a complication to the scene. So to use our example of declaring that there is a secret door, perhaps the player on the right of that player says, okay, well, opening the secret door is going to trigger a magical trap. And then we have option three, called The Gods Must Be Crazy. And this sounds really interesting, sounds like a lot of fun, and something I'd like to try just to see how this would go. So the way this works is there is no permanent DM of the group. Each player comes to the session with a character to play. Whoever is going to start out as DM runs his character as an NPC. And then during play, a player can spend their plot point to take over as DM. At that point, that player's player character becomes an NPC, and the previous DM, his player character, becomes a PC, and he starts playing that character. So I think this could be really fun. This would be, I mean, you want to know the people you're playing with, obviously, but this would be really great if you're playing around an actual table with people you've known for a long time and gamed with for a long time. If you're all dungeon masters of your own campaign, and maybe you're building a campaign world together, then this would be an awesome, awesome, fun way to play, I think. I'd love to try it out. But again, you would want to have the right group of people. You know, everybody would have to be comfortable being a DM. And if on a particular night you didn't feel like being DM, then you could just not spend your plot point and let the other people do it. We also, in this chapter, have various combat options. So we have some variants on initiative, including side initiative, where everybody goes at once on the PC side, and speed factor, back from the AD&D days. We have some more actions that you can perform, things like climbing onto a bigger creature, disarm, mark, overrun, shove aside, and tumble. Yay, tumbling. I remember that from second edition. I was always all about the tumbling. We have rules for hitting cover. Now, to me, I was actually kind of surprised to see this. This seems super obvious to me. Like, doesn't everybody do this? But basically, the gist is, if you're shooting at someone who's behind cover and you miss them, but you would have hit them if they weren't behind cover, then you just hit the cover. So this could come into play if, say, someone's taking cover behind a bale of straw and you're trying to hit them with a fire spell. Well, maybe you miss them, but you just set the straw on fire, kind of thing. So I do things this way anyway. I even carry this over to like shields and armor. You know, if you're fighting someone with a shield and you miss their armor class by one or two, well, you hit their shield. If you miss their armor class, but you would have hit them if they were unarmored, well, then you hit their armor. That's kind of how I roll. We have rules for cleaving, and this is really cool. So this is great if, as DM, you're throwing a bunch of weaker monsters at your stronger PCs. So say, for instance, you've got 5th, 6th level players, and you're throwing a bunch of kobolds or goblins at them. And the way the cleaving works, let's say you hit a kobold, an uninjured kobold, and you do enough damage to take it to 0 hit points, then the damage you have left over carries on to another kobold that's in range, as long as your original attack roll would hit that other creature. And you can keep doing this until you run out of damage to carry over. Now, note that this only works if the creature is uninjured. So if your buddy, you know, hits a kobold for a few hit points and he's hanging on with one hit point left, and then you finish him off, you don't get to cleave for that. So that's a super, super awesome way to handle it if you're in that situation where you want to speed up a combat like that. And I like things like this that take what was a feat in 3rd edition that not everybody could get, or not everybody had at least, and just makes it something that everybody can do if the DM uses this rule. We have a lingering injuries optional rule, and this is when you take a critical hit, or you're dropped to 0 hit points but you aren't killed, or you fail a death save by 5 or more, you get to roll on the lingering injuries table. And this is super fun. Not only does this add a little bit of realism to what can often be a completely unrealistic game, but it's also something that will be fun and unexpected, and something that you get to role play this injury that your character has and you now have to deal with and get it healed somehow. We, of course, have our massive damage rules, which is, you know, very similar to what we've seen in previous editions, and our morale rules. So we have here a system for determining if, you know, if your PCs are fighting a group of enemies and they're just killing them left and right, to determine whether the ones that are left decide to keep fighting or decide to surrender or run away. We then have a section on creating monsters, and this has guidelines for doing everything from modifying an existing monster to creating a brand new monster from scratch. And one thing that I really love in this section is we have this awesome table of monster features. And these are basically abilities that different monsters have. They're alphabetized, and the table gives example monsters that have that ability and then tell you how that impacts the CR of the monster you're creating if you give them that ability. So the ability could be something like having a flying speed or being poisonous, or having a breath weapon, things like that. And that's really, really cool. We have a section on monsters with classes. It's really easy to add a class to a monster in this edition. We have a section on creating spells, so if you want to make up some of your own spells for your campaign. And we have a very nice chart here of spell damage by level. And so you can say, I want to make a 5th level spell, I want it to be single target, or I want it to be multiple target, and this chart will tell you how much damage it should do. We have a section on creating your own magic items, which is super cool. And then we have a section on creating your own race or subrace. And here we are given as an example the Aladrin and the Asimar. Now, I think this is really awesome that we're given these, at least the Asimar. I don't really care much about the Aladrin. I didn't play 4th edition, and we have plenty of elves already. Honestly, if I wanted another elf, I'd want the Avarial, not the Aladrin. But anyway, I already made my own Avarial variant, so that's cool. But the Asimar, you know, when I saw Tiefling as one of the core races, I was kind of like, where's the Asimar? You know, they're like bread and butter, right? So it's really cool that we're given the Asimar to go with the Tiefling. These aren't fleshed out like the races in the Player's Handbook are. We're not given all of the flavor stuff. It's just the mechanics. But it's there if you want to use it. My only problem with this is I don't know that these were the best examples to show how to create your own race or subrace, because it seems to me that both of these were like super obvious and easy to do. You know, it's not hard to figure out what an Asimar would be like mechanically. I think it would have been a lot better if, in addition to giving us these, if they would have given us an example of something that's a little trickier to kind of show how Wizards designers would deal with something more tricky like that. Instead of giving these really straightforward examples, I mean, we probably could have figured this out on our own. We have a section on modifying a class. So if you want to make some changes to one of the classes, like swapping out abilities or things like that. And we have a spell points variant. So if you dig spell points, check that out. And finally, we have a section on creating backgrounds. Now, I may, as a DM making my own world, I'll probably come up with my own monsters. I may come up with my own race. Probably not. I may come up with my own subrace. I mean, I've already done the Avarial. So, yeah, that'll happen. But I think creating a background, this is going to be super useful, not just to me, but to a lot of DMs. Because, you know, if you're creating your own world or running in your own world, backgrounds are a great way to kind of bring the flavor of your world into the game and bring the setting, your setting, into the game through the backgrounds that are available. I think backgrounds, no matter how many they give us, we're always going to want more backgrounds, right? There's always going to be some idea for a background that a player has or a DM has that we don't have rules for. So we're always going to want to be making our own backgrounds. And so we have guidelines here on how to do that. So that is the end of, what was this, chapter 9? So chapters 8 and 9, just so much stuff just crammed in this book. Next, we have some appendices. So we have Appendix A, which is random dungeons. I mentioned this earlier in this series of episodes. And this is where you can literally sit down with some dice, no idea what you're going to do, some graph paper, and you can create an entire dungeon from scratch. And this is super awesome. So you start out with your starting area, you determine what that is, and then you roll, you know, how many exits are there? You know, is this exit a door or a passage? And it just kind of spiders out from there. So some of the charts you have to roll on, you have starting area, passages, doors, chambers, stairs, connecting areas. And then you have a whole section for stocking your dungeon. So once you got your floor plan worked out, you got to know, like, what's in there, right? So you've got chamber purpose. And you figure out your chamber purpose by rolling on one of a variety of tables that are based on what the dungeon's purpose is, which we talked about the dungeon purpose tables in one of the earlier episodes. That's in the beginning of the book. You can figure out your dungeon purpose. And some of the purposes are death trap, maze, mine, lair, planar gate, stronghold, temple or shrine, tomb, treasure vault, or just a general chamber. And those are like your latrines and your kitchens and stuff like that. We have current chamber state. So, you know, is this chamber immaculate? Is it torn apart? What's the deal there? Chamber contents, what's in it? Monsters and motivations. So not only, you know, what monster is here, but why is it here and what does it want? Dungeon hazards, obstacles, traps, tricks, dungeon dressing, like pillars and columns and carvings and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, lots of great stuff. And again, if you're not wanting to create a random dungeon, you can still get lots of great ideas here if you're kind of stumped or you need some inspiration for whatever dungeon you're making. And then we have Appendix B, which is monster lists. And this has our encounter tables by environment, as well as a list of monsters by challenge rating. Now, I'm kind of scratching my head why this is in the DMG and not in the monster manual. I kind of go back and forth as to whether I would rather it's in the monster manual. But I mean, I have all three, so it's not a huge deal. But sometimes it's weird, you know, when I'm coming up with encounters or whatever, you know, and I'm looking through the monster manual, that I gotta go to the DMG for my encounter tables. And they're in the back in an appendix instead of being in the section on encounters in the beginning of the book where I'm balancing, you know, my XP budgets and stuff. And the encounter balancing, I would have liked to have seen the encounter tables, the monsters by challenge rating, and the whole section on how to balance an encounter in the monster manual instead of in the DMG. But what are you gonna do? And then Appendix C is maps. We have quite a few sample maps given, and these are full color maps, which is super cool. And then Appendix D is Dungeon Master inspiration. So here are some books that you can read and things like that to get some inspiration. And then, of course, we have the index. And so that is finally, we've gotten to the back cover of the DMG. And it's taken me 3 episodes, but I've finally gotten through it. And I've just been kind of hitting the highlights, like the categories and the topic headings. I haven't been going super deep into a lot of this. So as you can see, there's a lot here in this book. There's a lot of great stuff. And again, I think even this stuff I talked about today, although it's a little more specific to D&D, I still think a lot of this you could find very useful for just about any game that you're running. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 18 of Game Master's Journey. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can find me on Google+. Just search for Lex Starwalker. And you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website starwalkerstudios.com, where you can find lots of helpful links in the show notes, as well as a link to our Google+ community page. Definitely go check that out. We have a lot of fun there. Great place to go for inspiration or ideas, or just to bounce things back and forth with other GMs. If you enjoy Game Master's Journey, we'd really appreciate your support in keeping the show going. A great way that you can help us out is to become a patron of the show. You can learn more about that at patreon.com/gamemastersjourney, or just use the link at the top of the show notes. We have lots of options for you to give a monthly donation and get some little bonuses and thank yous from the studio for that. If you prefer to just give us a one-time donation, you can do that using the donate button at the top of our website. And finally, another great way that you can help the studio out and help support the show is to try Audible Books. We've got a free trial for you, courtesy of Game Master's Journey. You get one book during your 30-day free trial. I highly recommend the book Ringworld by Larry Niven. I just finished reading that myself, and I checked, they do have it on Audible Books, and that is a great inspiration for a weird RPG setting. Put it on a Ringworld. Super cool stuff. So once again, I want to thank you so much for listening to Game Master's Journey. I will be back next Tuesday with another episode. Thanks again so much. I'm Lex Starwalker. Game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.